activist and researcher, Saibaz Ruhollah Rasfi. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqara, recited by Ali Pariskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنبَتَتْ سَبْعَ سَنَابِلَ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنبَتَتْ سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم لهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every year. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
U.S. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden says he is going to win the race for the White House as he expands his lead over President Trump in key states. The coronavirus crisis in the U.S. is deepening as the country reports a record number of more than 127,000 new cases. Also coming up, Iran's foreign minister in a meeting with his Cuban counterpart says Tehran and Havana have stood together in the face of the U.S.'s, quote, economic terrorism. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story this hour, the U.S. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden has once again addressed the nation as his lead grows in several battleground states in the race for the White House.
We're going to win this race. Just look at what has happened since yesterday. 24 hours, we were behind in Georgia. Now we're ahead, and we're going to win that state. 24 hours ago, we were behind in Pennsylvania, and we are going to win Pennsylvania. And now we're ahead, but we're winning in Arizona. We're in Nevada. In fact, our lead just doubled in Nevada.
Biden called on the American people to be patient and wait for all the ballots to be counted. He stressed that the purpose of American politics should be solving problems and not fanning the flames of conflict. The former vice president was speaking from his hometown state of Delaware. This is while the campaign of incumbent President Donald Trump has filed lawsuits to challenge the vote counts and results in several states. Trump supporters have also held rallies outside ballot counting centers in different cities demanding a recount. The protesters reiterated Trump's allegation that Democrats have rigged the vote. In the state of Pennsylvania, The demonstrators called for the disqualification of delayed mail-in ballots, but the state's apex court rejected their claims. Trump himself has vowed to continue the fighting, saying he has no plans to concede. The tensions grow as the vote counting is ongoing in several swing states where a record number of people cast their ballots via mail. And the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives calls Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden president-elect, even though the vote counting in some battleground states continues.
President-elect Biden has a strong mandate to lead, and it will have a strong Democratic House with him and many Democrats in the Senate.
Top Democrat Nancy Pelosi said it is clear that Biden will be the next president of the United States, hailing him as a unifier. She also referred to current President Donald Trump as a lame duck. Pelosi warned, however, that Trump will try to, quote, destroy the credibility of the election and do mischief as long as he remains in office. Several prominent Republicans have rallied behind U.S. President Donald Trump over his claims that Democrats are using illegal votes in an attempt to steal the election.
I think you're going to see in the next 48 hours real evidence of systematic voting irregularities. There's a complaint filed by the U.S. Attorney to the U.S. Attorney in Michigan, someone, I think, in the post office, who was told to backdate ballots instead of November the 4th. It'd be November the 3rd, so they'd be counted. Democracy
depends upon fair election. Graham described the results in Philadelphia as crooked as a snake. Representative Kevin McCarthy, who leads the Republican minority in the House, said the results were far from over. Senator Ted Cruz claimed that Pennsylvania's Democratic Attorney General had ordered vote counting in Philadelphia to continue until Joe Biden wins. However, other Republicans distanced themselves from Trump's claims of fraud or adopted a more balanced stance. Senate Majority Leader, for example, Mitch McConnell said every legal vote should be counted while illegally submitted ballots must not. Trump campaign has filed lawsuits in several states reaching out to donors to raise at least $60 million. To fund legal challenges. Political commentator Margaret Kimberly says the desire to get President Donald Trump out of the office is the main reason for the huge turnout in the U.S. presidential election.
What is surprising is the fact that it's taken, this is now the third day of counting votes, but that's an indication of the huge turnout that was created, frankly, by Donald Trump and by the desire to get this man out of office so that many of those who sat out in 2016 were moved to get to the polls in 2020. But it's interesting, Biden appears to be headed to victory. It's much more difficult for Donald Trump to get there. And that is why he is calling these lawsuits, which I believe will be futile. We're going to have a Biden presidency, but that brings with it some challenges because there's a large number of voters who just want to get rid of Trump, who have not really asked much of Biden. And he is in a position, frankly, to create huge problems in this country and around the world.
And political commentator Netfa Freeman says the U.S. presidential election is used to misdirect the radical energy of Americans.
People have been mobilized to dislike Trump, and he's very easily dislikable. But at the same time, because we're not asking for anything, there's some serious problems that the country has that will not be addressed by a Democratic presidential candidate, particularly Joe Biden. For example, the economic extreme crisis that this country is in that's been exacerbated because of the pandemic. There is the issue of police, really rampant police brutality and extrajudicial killings, that Joe Biden has promised that he wants to increase funding for the police and support the police. And so there's really no difference there. And then there's a threat of war that we don't really hear a lot about, and the media has done a good job of, if not being in line with the march to war, they definitely don't report on it. And so particularly with against Russia and China. And so these are the things that I think the public could be very well blindsided by, and that a lot of hopes have been put into the election. In fact, the uprisings that we saw right after murder of George Floyd, they have kind of been misdirected, which is how they use the electoral process a lot in this country, to misdirect the radical expressions and energies of the populace, particularly of people, non-white people.
Chilean security forces have clashed with anti-government protesters holding a fresh rally in the capital, Santiago. Police in riot gear used tear gas and water cannons to disperse the crowd. The protesters have been demanding reforms to the pension, healthcare, and education systems since a year ago. The campaign led to a successful vote for constitutional changes last month. That is now a key demand of the government movement. Dozens of people have been killed and thousands more injured since the beginning of the protests. And in other news, the United States has reported more than 127,000 new daily COVID-19 cases, setting a record for the third consecutive day. The U.S. also reported more than 1,100 deaths in 24 hours. It is the fourth day in a row that the country's daily death toll exceeds 1,000. The U.S. has reported more than 236,000 fatalities, with infection cases standing at over 9.7 million. Meanwhile, Brazil reported almost 19,000 infections and nearly 280 deaths in the past day. The country has now registered over 5.6 million infection cases, while the official death toll has risen over 162,000. In Mexico, the health ministry reported nearly 6,000 confirmed cases and over 550 more deaths. Mexico's overall fatalities have surpassed 94,000. A number of European countries record a steep rise in coronavirus infections and deaths as the continent is grappling with a second wave of the pandemic. France confirmed a record high of over 60,000 daily cases and 826 new deaths. Italy reported nearly 38,000 new infections, its biggest daily tally so far. The health ministry also reported a six-month record of 446 new deaths. This as the country's worst-hit regions returned to lockdown on Friday. Russia also reported over 20,500 new infections, its largest daily caseload of the pandemic. Hungary registered over 100 daily deaths and more than 4,700 new infections. Ukraine posted a new record in its daily deaths with 201 new fatalities. Germany also reported more than 21,500 new cases. Protests against the government's handling of the pandemic crisis have continued in Italy. Angered taxi drivers have staged two protests in Rome, calling on the executive to support their sector with subsidies. Max Cividi has more from Rome.
On Friday, taxi drivers went on a one-day strike nationwide, calling the government's attention to the economic plight they're facing following the pandemic crisis and the connected restrictions. Unions also called two protests held in front of the economy and transport ministries, attended by thousands of taxi drivers from across the country. Drivers are demanding more support from the government as, quote, they don't have the money to pay the monthly costs of the vehicles, nor to provide for their families.
Gli aiuti ricevuti sono assolutamente insufficienti.
The subsidies we have received from the government so far are totally inadequate. 275 euros each month is not sufficient. How are we supposed to put food on the table for our families? Consider we have suffered losses in the range of 80 to 90%.
Intorno ai 3600 euro.
Io ho ricevuto.
My income has dropped by 80%, but all expenses have remained unvaried. Insurance fees, fuel and car disinfection costs have not been reduced. Furthermore, the government is doing nothing to stop illegal cabs from going around.
È molto alta.
A new three-tier restriction system came into force on Friday. As a result, four Italian regions, namely Calabria, Lombardy, Piedmont and Val d'Aosta, have been placed in soft lockdowns. The government has also imposed a nationwide curfew from 10 p.m. until 5 a.m., requiring all museums and galleries to shut down and all shopping centers to close on weekends.
Protests against the new anti-COVID restrictions imposed by the government have been staged in a number of cities across Italy. Some demonstrations turned violent as protesters vented their frustration and anger over how the pandemic crisis has been handled.
The virus is a moving train. Today it is necessary to slow it down, otherwise the train will knock us down. We are hopeful that these measures will be limited to several weeks.
The new restrictions imposed by the Italian government apply for about 4 weeks until December 3. Max Civili, Rome.
Turning to other news now, Iran's foreign minister says his country and Cuba have stood together despite U.S. quote, economic terrorism.
Iran and Cuba have stood together in the face of pressure from the United States, pressure that can only be considered as economic terrorism.
Zarif made the remarks in a meeting with his Cuban counterpart, Bruno Rodriguez, in Havana. Rodriguez described the meeting as a very important occasion to boost political and economic ties between the two countries. Zarif's visit to Havana and his meeting with Cuban officials come in line with the two nations' efforts to strengthen mutual support in the face of Washington's sanctions. Zarif visited Cuba 2 days after he arrived in Venezuela, another Latin American ally that is subjected to U.S. sanctions. Political analyst Judith Bellows says Iran is leading the resistance against the U.S. sanctions by developing economic and political ties with Cuba and Venezuela.
I'm really very happy to see that not only is the axis of resistance in the Middle East coming together with Iran as a central player, but also there's a new axis of resistance coming together across the global south. And that's really, I think, a very positive development because it allows these countries, Iran and Cuba, Venezuela, and you know, many more countries that are under sanctions right now will hopefully become involved in an ability to have their own trade network and your own ability to be self-sustaining without having to be involved in what the U.S. has always considered a global monetary system, but since it shut so many countries out, is actually being sidelined, and you're developing new trade routes, new support systems, becoming more self-sufficient. And I think as horrible as the U.S. has treated you, it's also a wonderful development for not only for Iran and Cuba and Venezuela, but for the world in general, that you are finding ways to support one another and to open new futures.
A Palestinian in Israeli jail has ended his nearly four-month hunger strike after reaching a deal with Israel to release him. Maher El-Akhris is to be released on November the 26th. He was on hunger strike for more than 103 days in protest against Israel's so-called administrative detention policy. Al-Akhras was arrested near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus in July. He was put in administrative detention, a policy Israel uses to hold Palestinian suspects without charge for an indefinite period of time. According to a Palestinian rights group, El Odamir, out of the 4,400 Palestinians in Israeli jails, 355 are being held under administrative detention orders. International rights groups have called Israel's policy a violation of the humanitarian law. Mona Kandil says Palestinians see the release of hunger-striking prisoner Maher al-Akhras as a great victory against the Israeli regime.
For the Palestinians, this news is a victory. A Palestinian prisoner has achieved a victory. Another Palestinian prisoner on administrative detention achieves a victory in the face of the Israeli policy, the illegal administrative detention that allows the Israeli regime to keep Palestinians behind bars for a long period of time, for months and years, without charges or trials. Palestinians were happy about receiving this news. The different political powers, the Hamas resistance movement, issued a statement saying Maher al-Akhras and his hunger strike represents another example, and it's a continuation of the path of resistance to grab freedom. The jihad movement also welcomed this news and considered the battle of Maher al-Akhras as another victory in facing the illegal administrative detention. And it's an insistence also by another Palestinian prisoner to grab freedom.
That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Rabbi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Rabbi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rabbi English Radio.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. Oh, the most merciful.
In the limelight. According to NASA estimates, there are at least 100 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy, of which about 4 billion are sun-like. If only 7% of those stars have habitable planets, a seriously conservative estimate, there could be as many as 300 million potentially habitable Earth-like planets out there in the whole Milky Way alone. Ravi Kumar Kapparapu, a researcher at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, said, "We want to be very conservative in case nature has any surprises regarding habitability." He added, "So we are lowballing the estimates intentionally. On average, the astronomers calculated the nearest such planet should be about 20 light-years away, and there should be four of them within 30 light-years or so of the Sun." We are prepared for you an article written by Dennis Oberby, titled "Looking for Another Earth? Here are 300 million, maybe." The article has appeared in the New York Times. Please stay with us for more of Dennis Oberby's article. A decade ago, a band of astronomers set out to investigate one of the oldest questions taunting philosophers, scientists, priests, astronomers, mystics, and the rest of the human race. How many more Earths are out there, if any? How many far-flung planets exist that could harbor life as we know it? Their tool was the Kepler spacecraft, which was launched in March of 2009 on a 3.5-year mission to monitor 150,000 stars in a patch of sky in the Milky Way. It looked for tiny dips in starlight caused by an exoplanet passing in front of its home star. When the mission was launched in March of 2009, William Borucki said, "It's not ET, but it's ET home." It was Borucki, an astronomer now retired from NASA's Ames Research Center, who dreamed up of the project and spent two decades convincing NASA to do it. Before the spacecraft finally gave out in 2018, it had discovered more than 4,000 candidate worlds among those stars. So far, none have shown any sign of life or habitation. Granted, they're very far away and hard to study. Extrapolated, that figure suggests that there are billions of exoplanets in the Milky Way galaxy, but how many of those are potentially habitable? After crunching Kepler's data for 2 years, a team of 44 astronomers led by Steve Bryson of NASA Ames Research Center has landed on what they say is the definitive answer, at least for now. Their paper has been accepted for publication in the Astronomical Journal. Kepler's formal goal was to measure a number called Eta Earth, the fraction of sun-like stars that have an Earth-sized object orbiting them in the Goldilocks or habitable zone, where it is warm enough for the surface to retain liquid water. The team calculated that at least one-third, and perhaps as many as 90% of stars similar in mass and brightness to our own sun have rocks like Earth in their habitable zones, with a range reflecting the researchers' confidence in their various methods and assumptions. That is no small bonanza, however you look at it. According to NASA estimates, there are at least 100 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy, of which about 4 billion are sun-like. If only 7% of those stars have habitable planets, a seriously conservative estimate, there could be as many as 300 million potentially habitable Earth-like planets out there in the whole Milky Way galaxy alone. Ravi Kumar Kaparapu, a researcher at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, and one of the authors of the report, said, "We want to be very conservative in case nature has any surprises regarding habitability," he added, "so we are lowballing the estimates intentionally. On average, astronomers calculated, the nearest such planet should be about 20 light years away, and there should be 4 of them within 30 light years or so of our own sun. Natalie Batalha, an astronomer at the University of California at Santa Cruz, who directed the Kepler mission during most of his life and was one of the authors of the new paper, in a triumphant email said, "It took 11 years from launch to publication, but this is it." She added, "This is the science result we've all been waiting for, the reason that Kepler was selected for flight in December of 2001. The new result means that the galaxy is at least twice as fertile as estimated in one of the first analyses of Kepler data in 2013. That finding by Andrew Howard, Eric Petigura, and Jeffrey Marcy, who were not part of the Kepler team, concluded that about one-fifth of sun-like stars harbored planets in their habitable zones. Natalie Batalha said that one improvement this time around was the addition of data from the European Gaia satellite, which has measured the position and brightness of 1 billion stars. The knowledge allowed the Kepler scientists to more precisely chart the habitable zones of their stars. Another improvement was better handling of the statistics, although, as Natalie Batalha noted, surveys are inherently incomplete. You can't call up every citizen. You can't observe every star. In the case of Kepler, the limitation was serious. The spacecraft's orientation system failed before Kepler could complete the primary survey, which limited it to detecting planets that had orbital periods of less than about 700 days, about twice the duration of an Earth year. In an email, David Charbonneau, the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, said he was slightly skeptical of the result. "The Kepler mission didn't detect many, arguably any, true Earth analogs, that is, planets with the same radius as Earth and orbiting at the same period, and hence receiving the same amount of light, and orbiting sun-like stars. As Natalie Batalha said at the time, we don't yet have any planet candidates that are exact analogues of the Earth in terms of size, orbit, and star type. We still don't. As a result, the astronomers had to extrapolate data from the planets that they did see. Although these Kepler planets are Earth-sized, 1.5 the radius of Earth, they are presumably rocky. Nobody knows what they are like in any detail, nor whether anything does or could live on them. They are too far away for further study. So far, we know of only one planet, our own, that harbors life. But there are plenty of opportunities yet to find out. The Kepler measurement of Eta Earth only pertains to stars like the Sun, but in the galaxy, those stars are vastly outnumbered by smaller, dimmer stars known as red dwarfs. 1/4 to 1/2 of red dwarfs also harbor habitable zone planets, according to work by Courtney Dressing, now at the University of California at Berkeley, although some astronomers worry that radiation flares from such stars would doom any life trying to get started there. Red dwarf planets were not included in the new analysis of Eta Earth. The red dwarf planets are relevant to the search for life because Kepler has passed the torch to a spacecraft called the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, or TESS, which was launched in 2018 to scour the entire sky for exoplanets within a few hundred light-years of Earth, the local neighborhood. So far, TESS, or the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, has discovered 66 new exoplanets and has catalogued more than 2,000 candidates. George Ricker, an astrophysicist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and principal investigator for the mission, in an email said, "Most of those planets were expected to be found circling red dwarfs." He added, "Since about 3/4 of the stars in the solar neighborhood are M dwarfs, that leaves open a very large discovery space for TESS in the decade ahead." Natalie Batalha said that young scientists in the future might yet find a way to improve the value of Eta Earth. Until then, this will be the de facto standard. The value of Eta Earth is an important and hitherto unknown factor in a mathematical expression known as the Drake equation. It is used by astronomers to estimate how many technological civilizations might exist in the galaxy, and that we might be able to contact by radio or other means some cosmic day. It's time to move on to the next factor in the Drake equation for extraterrestrial civilizations, the fraction of these worlds on which life emerges. The search for even a single slime mold on some alien rock would revolutionize biology, and it is a worthy agenda for the next half century as humans continue to climb out of ourselves and into the universe in the endless quest to end our cosmic loneliness.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
European News Bulletin.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us. My name is Saeed Pereza, and we begin this broadcast in the U.S. As many predicted, this election is far from over. As the counting approaches its conclusion, President Donald Trump throws out convention and alleges widespread fraud and corruption as his chances of winning slip away. Murtaza Jaffer has more details as legal battles are prepared and supporters hit the streets.
Love of Tipper and our family.
While previous elections have been settled with consolation and congratulation, U.S. President Donald Trump is in no mood for diplomacy and discretion. If there was ever any doubt, the 45th president of the United States has signaled he will only go down fighting and will take the system down with him if necessary.
Our goal is to defend the integrity of the election. We'll not allow the corruption to steal such an important election or any election for that matter. And we can't allow silence, anybody to silence our voters. There are many instances which will be reported very shortly. There's tremendous litigation going on. And this is a case where they're trying to steal an election. They're trying to rig an election. And we can't let that happen.
Trump has always done things his own way, irrespective of the consequences. But as many fear, his words are going to have real consequences. Protests are growing in the streets as authorities brace for possible unrest. In Detroit, police have detained a man in an alleged plot to attack the city's Pennsylvania Convention Center, where votes are being counted. In Philadelphia, supporters of both candidates came face to face, with armed police separating both sides. Senator Mitt Romney and other Republicans took to Twitter to condemn the president's assault on the country's democratic process. Senator Jeff Flake said no Republican should be okay with the president's statements just now. Unacceptable, period. Republican Representative Adam Kinzinger said, "This is getting insane.
I ask everyone to stay calm, all the people to stay calm. The process is working. The count is being completed. And we'll know very soon. So thank you all for your patience, but we have to count the votes."
Journalists on the left have mocked the president as petulant, but this will only add fuel to the fire.
Well, I don't think we've ever seen anything like this from a president of the United States. And I think, as Jake said, it's sad and it is truly pathetic. And, of course, it is dangerous. And, of course, it will go to courts. But you'll notice the president did not have any evidence presented at all. Nothing. No real, actual evidence of any kind of fraud. Talked about people putting up papers in windows. He talked about things that he'd seen on the internet. That is the president of the United States. That is the most powerful person in the world. And we see him like an obese turtle on his back, flailing in the hot sun, realizing his time is over.
Global audiences remain enthralled at the spectacle, despite knowing the actual outcome is weeks away. In the U.S., however, tensions remain high. With every sign, President Trump will do everything he can to hold on to power for as long as possible.
And while we all await the final results of the U.S. presidential election, protests across cities in the country, in New York, for example, police have made nearly 70 arrests in Greenwich Village in the Big Apple. Their charges that they were outside agitators that tried to hijack a peaceful protest. Well, let's bring in Robert Inlakesh for more. Robert, is this a storm shaping up in the U.S.?
Well, to be completely honest, a lot of people predicted there would be a lot more violence than this. And of course, the results that have came out, the results that have emerged in the worst possible way. So we're seeing the worst possible scenario here, and it is expected that armed groups will come out and perhaps try and stop the election from going and running its course. And we know that if all the votes aren't counted by the 11th and there's not a declared winner by the 11th of this month, they could perhaps delay this further, take things to the courts, and things could get extremely messy. And now we've seen that Pennsylvania and Georgia have swung in favor of Joe Biden. And for Trump supporters, this is really not acceptable to them, because Trump has ran his entire campaign basically saying that mail-in votes are going to be fraud, they're going to steal the election, and Trump supporters really believe this. And the Democrats haven't helped this, to be completely honest, the way they've went after Trump with scandal after scandal. For instance, Russiagate was one of the big ones, which they went after Trump with, and that turned out to be completely incorrect and false. And so Trump supporters feel like they're hard done to, they feel like they're being cheated. Of course, there's no evidence that has emerged at this point that there has been fraud, but people feel this way. And of course, if armed groups are going to get involved in these protests, if armed groups are going to go and stop the votes from being counted, they could pressure them to stop counting votes. And they could declare that there is no winner on the 11th if all the votes are not counted. This is a possible scenario. And if Joe Biden is declared the winner, then this could result in a large amount of violence in the United States. We've already seen that coming to fruition.
That may well happen, Robert. And everybody is saying that every claim he has made regarding mail-in ballots and everything else, it's been debunked. I mean, you watch Fox News, some of the pundits on Fox News are even agreeing with the rest of the country that these claims are not grounded in facts. What has the online reaction been to this?
Well, of course, online you've got Trump supporters and those who are absolutely against him. We've pulled up a few here. One saying Trump throwing out lies to his base to incite violence. U.S. elections are monitored by international observers who debunked Trump's lies and paranoia. We have another one here as well, saying that Donald Trump has just sent text messages to supporters seemingly calling for violence, saying, "I need you. The left will try and steal this election. I'm calling on you to step up and fight back." So that's pretty damning if that in fact did go out.
All right, let's go all the way to the Middle East, the U.S.'s ally there, and the demolition by the Israeli military of a large portion of a Palestinian community in the West Bank that has left 73 people, including 41 children, homeless, Robert.
Yes, unfortunately, the Israelis have yet again used the U.S. election and the coverage of that basically as a cloak in order for them to get away with this massive expulsion inside of the Jordan Valley. The Jordan Valley also is a place where Israel has been talking about annexing for some time, so they have to ethnically cleanse these communities and get them out of there so that they can go ahead and seize that land. I mean, already you've got 85% of it as a closed military zone, many settlers moving in there. And so I've been to the Jordan Valley myself and seen when they have demolished these villages, and it's not a pretty sight. There were 70 plus structures, which were destroyed by Israel. This left at least 73 Palestinians homeless. Over 40 of them were children. And really, we've seen little to no coverage of this. It was done at a time where there were little cameras on the event. And also on top of this, this runs in tandem with what's been happening in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, where Israel has essentially this year broken all previous records for home demolitions in Jerusalem, Al-Quds, yet we have not seen this reported at all. I mean, Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem's pointed this out, and many other human rights organizations have been sounding the alarms, yet we've seen absolutely no coverage of this. And also inside of what is regarded as Israel, and inside of the Zionist entity itself and the land that it claims as its own, we've seen every single year for the past 3 years 2,000 Palestinian homes in the Nakab, or the Negev, some people may know it as by its Hebrew name, have been destroyed. So this ethnic cleansing is ongoing, and it's been going on since 1947, and it's never stopped.
All right, thanks for bringing that story to light, giving it due coverage. Robert, bring us the online reaction to what's been happening in the occupied territories.
The first one we have here is by a Twitter user called Beltrue, who says, "While everyone was distracted by the U.S. election, Israel just carried out its largest demolition in a decade, displacing dozens of Palestinians in the West Bank. More than 73 people, including 41 children, were made homeless despite coronavirus pandemic." And then we've got another one here as well who says, "Shame on the Arab countries with that ridiculous peace agreement." And many people are saying, are questioning, you know, what pieces came out of these so-called peace agreements, these normalization deals.
All right, Robert in Lakesh with those stories. Robert, thank you. And while we're talking Palestine, pro-Palestine activist Nazim Ali has been cleared of all charges accusing the pharmacist of making anti-Semitic comments during an Al-Quds rally in 2017. The verdict, handed down by the General Pharmaceutical Council, a governmental regulatory body, means Ali is now free to continue practicing his profession. He was issued with a warning, but had faced with being suspended or struck off. The three-year legal battle, first launched by Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, accused Mr. Ali of being anti-Semitic, according to the controversial IHRA definition, which conflates criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. And let's talk about that story with Robert Carter, who's been following it for us. Robert, good to see you. So 3 years of a legal battle are now over. How was Nazim Ali when you saw him?
Well, obviously, it's been a very long fought battle. Over 3 years now, Nazim Ali has been in and out of courts, fighting for his name and reputation. And obviously, throughout that period, it's come at great financial and stressful cost to Nazim, who is, of course, a lifelong anti-racism, pro-Palestine activist. But this has essentially been what he's described as an attempt at character assassination on his part. And it's taken over 3 years now for him to actually prove that to be the case. The fact is, the only thing he's guilty of is just speaking out in support of Palestine. Obviously, he admits that a lot of the things he said were indeed offensive, and he has already apologized for that fact. But ultimately, you know, he's had several court cases now. This is, I think, at least the third court case that he's been able to successfully win.
Yeah.
Each time round, they've admitted that it's not
racist. And they make mention of it, Robert, on their website, the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, that they have tried in the past to do the same, to no avail. Let's tell us what this outcome means for the pro-Palestinian cause in Britain.
Well, obviously, I think we can see it as a success story. Obviously, this is just one of many activists that have been hounded in this way and hit with this smear campaign to try and, you know, destroy their reputation, destroy their careers, and hit them where it hurts, which is in their private and financial life. So obviously in that sense it's a victory, but going forward Nazim even admitted that, you know, he's going to have to be careful of what he says. He's going to have to rethink about whether or not he'll continue his activities publicly, because obviously we live in an era now where freedom of speech on Palestine doesn't really exist in the UK. People who are pro-Palestine and outspoken in their criticism of Israel can easily find their careers damaged, hounded in society. They can end up in court, as you can see, and these are long drawn out processes. And pro-Israel activists know that obviously this is a tactic of intimidation. Even if they can't beat activists like Nazim legally, it can cause significant financial cost to them in order to fight for their name, and also significant stress, which will make activists think twice about speaking out for Palestine and condemning Israel in the future. So obviously it's a hard fought battle, which we have to keep fighting, but certainly we have to be very careful, as there are people looking out for opportunities to smear and to get people sent to court when they haven't said anything illegal.
All right, freedom of speech on Palestine doesn't exist. That's the quote from this interview, Robert Carter. Thank you very much. Moving on now, hundreds of anti-lockdown protesters took to the streets of London Thursday evening, on the same day England's second national lockdown went into effect. The demonstrators chanted freedom and no more lockdowns, despite a heavy police presence and COVID-19 restrictions. London's Metropolitan Police said they made 104 arrests, most of them for breaches of coronavirus regulations. The annual protest known as the Million Mask March is an anti-government demo which typically falls at the anniversary of Guy Fawkes's attempt to blow up Parliament. German police have raided the homes and businesses of four men linked to the Takfiri extremist who carried out a deadly attack in Vienna this week. Police say while the men are not currently suspected of involvement in Monday's shooting, there is evidence they had links to the attacker. Four people were killed and 20 others wounded when the gunman opened fire on people outside cafes and restaurants. The attacker also wounded a police officer before he was shot dead. An update now on the COVID-19 pandemic in Europe. Belgian health authorities say they fear hospitals could run out of beds for COVID patients by the end of the week. The country has reported 500,000 confirmed cases and over 12,000 deaths so far. In Denmark, the government has announced tougher restrictions in parts of the country after health authorities discovered that a mutated strain of coronavirus in minks could be passed on to animals. To humans. It said it would cull up to 17 million of the animals to prevent a spread to humans. Greece has become the latest European country to impose a three-week national lockdown in the face of rising infections there. The country has had over 49,000 confirmed cases and north of 700 deaths. And now to Bahrain, a Persian Gulf nation notorious for its human rights abuses and for having the largest number of political prisoners in relation to population. The British government's role in propping up the regime is common knowledge, but names are now surfacing. Influential British figures have been advising King Hamad of Bahrain to solidify their strategic alliance. Here's more.
On the 14th of March 2011, Bahraini security forces began a violent crackdown on protests demanding greater political participation, free and fair elections, and an end to corruption and equality for the country's suppressed Shia majority. It has now been revealed that the UK's top military officer, General Sir David Richards, was in Manama holding meetings with the country's senior military officials and the Crown Prince 5 days earlier. In the brutal crackdown, Bahrain security forces were backed by 1,000 UK-trained and equipped Saudi troops. Since then, almost all prominent human rights defenders and dissidents have been jailed, silenced, or forced into permanent exile. The main opposition party, Al-Wefaq, has been dissolved, and the country's only independent newspaper, Al-Wasat, forcibly closed down. Torture is widespread in Bahrain's prisons, especially for the purpose of extracting confessions that are used to sentence people to death. And the country has the largest number of political prisoners in relation to population.
We have interviewed people, men, women, and children, who have been tortured by the regime. Children who have been snatched from the streets by armed gangs and have been then beaten and driven around the streets. One boy had his teeth knocked in. And they are forced then to inform on family members or friends or people that they know in the villages who have attended democratic protests or have attended political gatherings. Inside the prisons, people have been waterboarded. They've been beaten with truncheons on their bare bodies and on their feet. They've been hung for hours, days, and deprived of sleep. They have been anally raped with truncheons. They have been just the cruelest, most inhumane treatment.
Nonetheless, the British government continues to support the regime. When construction began on a new permanent naval base in Bahrain in 2015, then UK Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond said this.
This will give us the flexibility to respond to any emerging challenge in the Gulf, whether it's from a state actor or a non-state actor, whether it's from within the Gulf or outside the Gulf. This enhances our range. It gives Britain a permanent naval base east of Suez for the first time since 1967.
Strategic interests seem to be Westminster's priority. According to Human Rights Watch, arbitrary arrests, torture, executions, and forced disappearances continue with very little interference from so-called democracies. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Well, more now in the U.S. presidential election. Other than the American president himself, his son, his oldest son, Donald Trump Jr., is not very happy about the direction the election vote counting is going and is calling on his father to go to war for it. Joining me now with that story and more, Richard Sudan. And Richard, a totally normal thing to say for someone confident in their own legitimate victory.
I mean, just when you thought this presidential race could not get any more controversial, any more chaotic, Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, waded into debate and took to the Twitter sphere to call for all-out war in the wake of these outlandish and unfounded claims of voter electoral fraud. I mean, it's quite a spectacular state of affairs, really. I mean, if, you know, his son and Donald Trump's fans want Donald Trump to remain in office, they're not really doing a very good advertisement for him, and certainly not regarding the state of democracy. I have to say, one of the first things that popped into my mind when I saw this tweet is, what would be the reaction if a Muslim or a black leader or one of their sons took to Twitter to make this kind of claim calling for war? One can only imagine the kind of reaction we would see. But of course, no doubt Eric Trump is going to get a pass, although Twitter has actually, as a platform, censored a lot of these comments being made by Trump Jr. and also Donald Trump. But I mean, a quite incredible state of affairs, Saeed.
And what have Twitter users been saying? How did they react to that post?
It almost broke the internet, actually, Saeed. Let's go first to Mehdi Hassan, the journalist, who says, election officials are saying they fear for their lives. The president's son is calling for total war. The president's former top advisor is calling for the beheading of the FBI chief. But yeah, those of us who talk of authoritarianism and fascism, we're the alarmists, right? And we have a reaction from Volker, also on Twitter, who says, Donald Trump, you know what really looks like a banana republic? The imbecile offspring of an unhinged leader calling for total war. So very powerful words there from Volker, and they've been echoed throughout social media, Saeed.
All right, let's stay with that family, Richard. Donald Trump's speech last night, riddled with myths and untruths yet again.
Unbelievable. As if it was even possible for this one to be the most dishonest speech of his